No doubt many of us have heard and have expressed the old saying that someone can't see the forest for the trees. This statement describes someone who cannot see a situation as it truly is because they've gotten caught up in the details and they've lost perspective on the bigger issue. They can't see what's obvious. They can't see what's right in front of them because they're too focused on the specifics. Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev used to tell of a time when there was a petty theft wave of petty theft in factories in the Soviet Union. To put a stop to this, the authorities put guards around the factories. At one of the timber works in Leningrad, one of the guards was a local who knew all the factory workers quite well. At the close of the first evening, a worker named Vladimir Petrovich came out pushing a wheelbarrow. And in the wheelbarrow was a big, bulky sack. And the guard said, "All right, Petrovich, what have you got there?" Petrovich said, "Oh, just sawdust and shavings." The guard said, "Come on, I wasn't born yesterday. Tip it out." So Petrovich dumped the bag out, and sure enough, it was filled with nothing but sawdust and shavings. So he swept it all back into the bag, and he was allowed to take it home. When the same thing happened every night of that week, the guard became frustrated. Finally, his curiosity overcame his frustration, and at the end of the week, the guard finally said, "Okay, Petrovich, I know you. Tell me what you're smuggling out of here, and I'll let you go." Petrovich said, "Wheelbarrows, my friend. Wheelbarrows." All of us have been guilty of looking for the pencil that's right in our hand, or looking for the glasses that are right on our nose, or the hat that's on our head. I invite you to turn with me to Luke chapter 10. In the 10th chapter of Luke's gospel, we see Jesus spending time with two sisters named Mary and Martha. Luke 10, beginning in verse 38. We're told, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Now, John chapter 11 tells us that the village was Bethany, which was about 1.5 miles southeast of Jerusalem. Then in verse 39, we're told that Martha had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. Sitting at one's feet was commonly used to mean being a disciple, being someone's disciple. For example, in Acts chapter 22, verse 3, the Apostle Paul said that he had been brought up at the feet of Gamaliel, a very prominent Jewish rabbi. So Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet listening to what he was saying. Then verse 40 says, "But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, 'Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me.' 'Martha, Martha,' the Lord answered, 'you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her.'" Some translations say that Martha was distracted with all her preparations, or that Martha was worrying over the big dinner she was preparing. And all of this while Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, was right there in the house with her. Jesus commended Mary for her clarity of vision, but Martha couldn't see, if you will, the forest for the trees. Have you ever been caught up in something so trivial, something inconsequential, only to later realize that you missed a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? John 1, verse 18 tells us that no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. Here was the one who had come to declare the Father, to explain God, the New American Standard says in John 1:18, or to make him known to us, another translation says. And Martha was concerned about setting the table. Martha asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." And Jesus said, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about many things, but only one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen what is better." Martha was so concerned about the details of preparing the meal. And there was nothing wrong with what Martha was doing. Meals need to be prepared. But she needed to reevaluate her priorities. How often we live our lives thinking too many things are important. Things that really don't matter that much. Instead of giving proper time and attention to the things that really matter, we are often ruled by the urgent. This has to be done now. That has to be done now. Got to take care of this. Got to take care of that. Instead of putting those things on hold, doing what we need to do, and then dealing with those things as we have opportunity. We need to take time to sit down and give attention to the things that really matter, things that are really important in the whole scheme of things. In Mark chapter 9, we read of an event that had a huge impact on three of Jesus' closest disciples. Mark chapter 9, verses 2 through 4 tells us that Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him and led them up a high mountain where they were all alone. There he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And there appeared before them Elijah and Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Peter, James, and John had been permitted to go with Jesus on this momentous occasion, and these three men were permitted to see something no other human has seen. I'm confident that this contributed to the sense of self-importance that both James and John seemed to display on a few later occasions. For example, down in verse 30 of the same chapter, Mark chapter 9, beginning in verse 30, the text says, "They passed through Galilee, and Jesus did not want anyone to know they were there, because he was teaching his disciples. And he said to them, 'The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after 3 days he will rise.' But they didn't understand what he meant, and they were afraid to ask him about it. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, 'What were you arguing about on the road?' But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest." We're told in verse 35, "Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, 'Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and servant of all.' He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, 'Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me.'" Nothing could better illustrate the danger of having a mind preoccupied with thoughts of self. Instead of contemplating Jesus' suffering that he just talked to them about and what it would involve for him and for them, they were preoccupied with self-centered arguments about greatness. Then sometime later in Mark chapter 10, verses 32 through 45, we're told that they were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. So here's a repeat. Chance for them to get it right this time, maybe. He says, "We're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him, and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him and said, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." When we are self-absorbed, We often miss things that are not centered on us. We even miss things of a critical nature if they do not concern our self-interest. Jesus was talking about him suffering one of the most terrible forms of punishment ever devised by man. But James and John couldn't get their mind off their plans for the future and their greatness. Again, when they asked to be able to sit at Jesus' right hand and left hand in glory, Jesus said, "You don't know what you're asking," verse 38. He said, "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink, and you will be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with." He's talking about difficulty, serious difficulty. But he said, "To sit at my right hand or my left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the ten heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. James and John saw self everywhere they looked. Jesus was trying to lead them to see bigger than themselves. Jesus was trying to get them to see service to others as the greater good. But James and John were distracted with self-concern. The positions on either side of a king's throne were the most prestigious in a kingdom. And this is where James and John were seeing themselves. But one has to wonder what they thought when they later saw the two thieves on Jesus' right and Jesus' left side while Jesus was hanging on the cross. You wanted to be on the right and the left? Did you think this through? Were you listening? Then beginning in verse 42, we're told that Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." It was common for Jewish teachers to use Gentile practices as negative examples. Jesus reminded the disciples that seeking power was a Gentile practice, a pagan practice. In the world, men delight in domineering and lording it over others and using personal influence to secure private advancement. But in the Lord's kingdom, in the church, true greatness flows from lowly and voluntary service. In John chapter 13, Jesus provided the disciples with an example of true greatness when he washed their feet. In John 13, verses 14 and 15, he said, "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." Then he said, "I have set an example that you should do as I have done for you." In Philippians chapter 2, Paul declares that Jesus is our example, and he explains that serving others, not seeking self-interest, is the key to being Christ-like, the key to true greatness. He said, "Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ," Philippians 2, verse 1, "if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one mind and of one spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant." On one occasion, Jesus was teaching a large crowd of people, And in Luke chapter 12, beginning with verse 13, we're told that someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." We recently just talked about this, but still it makes a point applicable for our discussion this morning. Someone said, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied in verse 14, "Who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out, be on guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. He said, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you've prepared for yourself?' This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God." Since Jesus was commonly regarded as a rabbi, it's not surprising that his opinion was sought regarding a legal matter. People often called upon rabbis to settle legal disputes, but it's hard to believe that this man was in the presence of the Lord, the great teacher, the Messiah, the Christ. And the only thing he could think of to say was, "Tell my brother to give me my money." The eldest son would always receive a double portion of the inheritance. This is called the law of primogeniture. And so the proportion of the inheritance was fixed, but it sounds like that it's possible, at least. It sounds perhaps likely that this man was probably a younger brother and he may have been denied his portion of the inheritance. And so he probably had a legitimate complaint because he had every legal right to receive his share. But that doesn't make it appropriate to do what he did. Jesus was teaching spiritual truths. He was revealing things of an eternal nature, the word of God coming from the very mouth of the God himself, God the Son. And this man is trying to reduce Jesus to the role of a mere rabbi, one who could resolve a legal dispute about money. The man in the parable represented this man. The man in the parable could see. He could envision new barns, bigger barns. No doubt he could see where he would build them on his land. He could see that in his mind's eye. He could see the handfuls of silver and gold that he would gain. But he couldn't see the needs of his soul. He couldn't see the impact his life was making on the souls of his wife and children and family and others. He couldn't see the needs of his own soul because he was too caught up in seeing his materialistic plans for the future. Instead of envisioning what he would do with more stuff, this man needed to envision what will be the fate of this world and everything in it. 2 Peter 3, verses 10 through 12, Peter says, "The day of the Lord will come like a thief. The heavens will disappear with a roar. The elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it, or everything done in it, will be laid bare. Since everything will be destroyed in this way, what kind of people ought you to be? You ought to live holy and godly lives as you look forward to the day of God and speed its coming. That day will bring about the destruction of the heavens by fire, and the elements will melt in the heat." The key to the art of being a magician is, there's something private there, but, is to get your audience to focus their attention on the wrong thing. Get them to watch your left hand while you're doing something, playing a trick on them with the right hand. That's precisely what Vladimir Petrovich was doing with the wheelbarrows. A huge bag of worthless stuff on top of the wheelbarrow was merely a distraction to get the guard to devote his attention to the wrong thing. He was looking at the trees, but he couldn't see the forest, you might say. We don't have to be involved in wicked, sinful behaviors in order to lose our souls. We can be focused on silly little things. We can be focused on trivial things, and we can lose our souls just like the man who wanted to build bigger barns. Doesn't say he was selling crack cocaine. Doesn't say he was involved in all kinds of shady business dealing. He just wanted to build bigger barns. That's not such a horrific thing, is it? We can get caught up in the mundane little things of life like Martha, and we can miss great opportunities. We can get caught up in our own self-interest. We can fail to see the critical needs of others like James and John. There's nothing inherently wrong with building bigger barns. Barns are not evil things intrinsically, but if building barns or focusing on a bag of sawdust continuously takes our mind off our soul, if it causes us to consistently neglect our spiritual needs, then spiritually speaking, we can't see the forest for the trees.